They get it to Boyd. Boyd gets it to Kyer. Kyer with three to Livingston. Long desperation three. He's good!
Hey, 10. Hey, 10. Hey, 10. GiantKiller.co and the By George Podcasting Network present an Atlantic 10 original. The Hey, 10 Podcast featuring Petey Buckets and Grant LeBenz.
Tosses it in. Championship.
All right, welcome everyone. We would like to say hello to a very special guest. You know him from the A10 basketball broadcasts that are so popular on Saturdays this time of year. Also, former head coach of the LaSalle Explorers, went to the Sweet 16 back in 2013. We are so happy to be joined today by Dr. John Giannini. Dr. John, how's it going?
Great. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, of course. We are very excited that you could make it on today. And we've got a bunch of questions that we want to throw at you. And I think the first one, where I want to start is your transition into broadcasting from coaching. And the reason I think it's interesting is that you're kind of a fan favorite in the A10, which is, you know, it's difficult to, you know, I think there's a very high bar for broadcasters to clear. People sort of start from a default position of, you know, they're smarter than whoever's on the TV talking about it. But I'm not sure if you have an awareness of this, but, you know, people on Twitter, people in the communities that we interact with, they love when you're on the call for games. So how have you been finding broadcasting so far?
First, I love to hear that because you usually don't get much feedback in broadcasting. And I really enjoy it. But the fascinating thing to me is for 34 years, I looked at the game as a coach. In fact, when I would watch games on TV, I'd actually shut the volume off so I could really focus and study on the X's and O's. So I had no idea what broadcasters do. And so players look at the game a certain way. Coaches look at a game a certain way. I'm a football fan, and I understand how fans look at a game. Broadcasters, officials. It's amazing how differently every group of people will look at the game. In fact, I was talking with one of my former players. Paul Johnson's a scout with the Oklahoma City Thunder, and he said he still plays once a week. And I told him that was phenomenal because when I was a grad assistant and I would still play pickup, as a coach, it helps you understand how a player watches the game. Over time, you forget that if you don't play. So now I watch it as a broadcaster.
So tell me a little bit more about how that's changed your the way that you watch the game as a broadcaster versus as a coach.
So I look at the game now in terms of how can I explain how or why something happened. As a coach, you're watching it trying to figure out how to beat the other team and understand what they're doing. Now I'm watching it to try to figure out how can I explain what just happened? How or why did that just occur? And that's very different. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. And I think that, you know, I'm curious about the extent to which you, when you're interacting with players as a coach, are you, you know, in a lot of ways, do you have to put that into sort of plain English for the players who might be, you know, younger, especially if you've got a freshman who's playing high school basketball last year? Is there a similarity there to the way you're sort of breaking down the game and explaining it as an announcer versus the way that you would say it to a player that you brought into the program?
So I really studied the broadcasting thing, and the highest compliment I heard someone give was to John Madden. And I actually had a coaching colleague tell me yesterday, he said, you did a good job. And I said, why? He says, because as a coach, I get certain things out of the broadcast. And he says, but I think the average fan who never played or coach can do, can get something out of what you say too. And what John Madden did is he could say something about a cover two defense that, like you said, a former NFL player or a coach would recognize immediately. And then he would say a middle of the road thing, like this receiver has a one-on-one matchup, they should look at him. And like a normal fan can understand that. But then he would say something for someone's grandma and say, you know, that's an offside, you can't move until the ball is snapped. So he could touch all three segments of the audience based on their football knowledge. And I think, you know, that's something I want to try to do in basketball.
Yeah, and that's tremendous. My last question on the broadcasting thing is, do you think you're going to stick around in broadcasting for a while, or is there a is the coaching itch starting to scratch?
It varies day to day, actually, and minute by minute. And of course, the coaching things, both these things you're so lucky to do, but especially coaching. There's only 350 Division I jobs. And, you know, I probably, you know, the odds are not high that I'll be offered a great job, but I've never had to make a hard decision. I've always seen what I'm supposed to do in front of my face, and it's never been a hard decision. So broadcasting was an easy decision. The job I have at Rowan was easy. Choosing the LaSalle job, going to Maine, my first head coaching job in D3, being a graduate assistant at Illinois. Like, all those decisions were frankly very easy for me because they were the best option. So if there's a great coaching option and my wife is on board with you know, just the all-out dedication and stress and moving the family that comes with that, you know, then that's what I'm supposed to do. So I hate to cop out a little bit, but I look at opportunities all the time. And if you do that, I don't think it's hard to figure out what the best one is. So if I'm not coaching, I would love to broadcast for a very long time.
Yep, you heard it here first on the Hey 10 podcast. Dr. Giannini is on the market. Now, switching gears a little bit, you talk a lot about analytics and broadcasts. I think your perspective on this is probably really interesting because you started coaching at Maine in the early 2000s, really before analytics was a thing, right? And then, you know, with the things like KenPom coming up, the 3-point revolution, teams just take so many more 3-pointers than they ever did before. You know, I think you've sort of seen that evolution firsthand as a coach. And I'd be like very, very curious to get your perspective on this, starting with how you used analytics or advanced stats, or did you look at KenPom in preparations for games when you were coaching?
I did not. Matt Bloom, who's the coach at Rutgers Prep now, is a Penn grad, way smarter than me. And he was my ops guy, and he handled all our analytics. But you're so right, it's changed. And I'll tell you where I am now, and then I'll tell you what I did as a coach. But right now, unless it was an exceptional player, I would want every 3-point shot to be a catch and shoot, not off the dribble. There are some teams, like, let's talk A-10. George Washington, when they scored 107 points against Davidson, all 107 were either from three, from the paint, or the free throw line. The mid-range shot, it's unbelievable how mathematically inefficient it is. Penn, I've done some Penn games. I have never seen them in a practice or game, even warm up a kid screwing around before or after practice. Not one person in their gym. I've probably seen them 10 times in practices and games, at warm ups, you name it. I've never even seen a player come close to taking a 14 to 19 foot shot. And I believe in it. I think efficiency is real. When I was coaching, though, the amount of numbers can be overwhelming. So this is the kind of number I'd be interested in. I have a guy at a site called dribblehandoff.com, St. Joe's tie, a former St. Joe's manager and math major. And he has a different take on things, a guy named Frank Deal. He'd be a great guest for you sometime. But Dayton, we'll talk A-10. Obi Toppin, whether he's in the game or not in the game, has like a single-digit impact, according to the analytics. Trey Landers has like a 42-point impact. When he's in the game per 100 possessions, Dayton outscores their opponent by 29. When he's not in the game, they actually lose by 12 per 100 possessions. And he's the only player on that roster that when he's not in the game, Dayton is in the minus on the plus minus for 100 possessions. I would never have guessed that. So when I was coaching, Matt Bloom would have, okay, per 100 possessions, here's what we score when so-and-so is in the game. Here's what we give up when so-and-so is in the game. And sometimes you just don't realize the value of some of those glue guys. Another thing Matt pointed out that I did that was bad, that's good in theory, is your best players, it's good to take them out right before or after a media timeout. So now they get an extra long break. But what he showed me is when you only have them out for that couple minutes, that lineup that's the makeshift lineup for just a couple minutes always performed terribly. So I thought that was interesting. Combinations of players I thought were interesting. So I never used it to influence my X's and O's or to influence my shot selection philosophy, which I would do now. But I did use it to influence how I allocated minutes, how I substituted, and who I would put in the game with who else.
Yeah, and that's I totally agree with your point about Trey Landers. I think it's probably open for debate whether Trey Landers is actually the most important because of what the plus minus says. I think that there's an element of, like, obviously it's Obi Toppin, right? But it's I think you can certainly use numbers like that to highlight guys, like you said, that you just maybe never would have known otherwise how important they actually are. And I also think that that's really interesting, that using the numbers to find the best lineup combinations as a coach that you can survive with while, you need to give your star players a rest. I think that's a really, really probably, unique application of it. And I'm also curious if you have thoughts on things like it. One thing that always kills me is college coaches just do not try to go 2-for-1 at the end of halves. And if you watch the NBA, which I'm a pretty big NBA guy too, but it's just common sense in the NBA. If you can get two shots and limit your opponent to one shot at the end of the half, then you absolutely should try to do it. College coaches almost universally do not try to do this. And do you have thoughts on that? Do you have insight into why that would be?
I did a number of things wrong, and that's why I'm not coaching anymore. But one of the things I did right was the 2-for-1 thing. There's no question it's the right way to go. I've won games because of going 2-for-1. My cat is acting up over here now. I hate that that's on, but we got a house full of animals. The 2-for-1 thing is a no-brainer. I'm stunned that college coaches don't do it more. I think that, I don't know whether it's not practicing getting a shot around. For me, it's around the 40-second mark because most teams aren't going to get a shot in the first 10 seconds. So if you get a shot around 40 seconds, you should get the ball back at some point. But I am in complete agreement with you. I think you have to do it. Over email, we talked about fouling when you're up 3. I think 6 seconds and under, that is an absolute no-brainer. But again, a lot of coaches don't do that. And here's the common sense explanation on the up by 3 scenario. Every single night on SportsCenter, and I mean every night, you see a buzzer beater 3. It happens every night of the season. How often do you see make the first free throw, get the rebound, and score on the putback? Like a handful of times a year. So not only with the numbers, but just experientially, if you watch the game, you know how seldom that happens. I would do it every time. It gets a little dicey if it's 10, 11 seconds, even 8, 9, 10 seconds, because now, they could foul you real quick and they could end up with their own 2-for-1. So I think it's a tough judgment call in that 15 to 8 second range, but I think like 6 seconds and lower, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, and I think that's I would love to have you back on the podcast at some point because I could talk about just this sort of stuff for like an hour. I'm a big basketball nerd. I love reading articles about this, the latest research on it. But we also asked you on for your A10 expertise since you've been calling so many games for him this year. So I'm going to hand it over to Grant. He's got some questions about what you're seeing out of the current A10 this season.
Yeah, of course. And one thing I wanted to wrap up on that last point, I think, great point on the fouling up 3. The one anecdotal example that comes to mind the other day was the Trey Jones Duke UNC game. But other than that, I can agree with you. I haven't seen it really work where a team is able to get to the line and then, tie up the game down 3. So I think that was a great point you made. But, I think sometimes we're reminded in our college basketball minds of the one standout example, but that's obviously not indicative of all of them. But
in Division III, my best team ever that did not go to a Final Four, we went to 3 out of 4 Final Fours, but our best team was the one that did not. And we fouled with 2.9 seconds left, and they ended up tying it up into overtime. But it was because of a missed box out. We just would have boxed out, we would have won the game. But you're so right. You can't take that one time and say, oh, it doesn't work. That's like saying, oh, You know, I had a great uncle who smoked a carton a day and drank a bottle of whiskey a day and lived to be 110. Yeah, you could find that person, but you got to go with what's most likely. And someone making a three at the buzzer is not unlikely. Doing the free throw, rebound, basket, that's the more unlikely one.
I think you're exactly right. And like Petey said, you know, we wanted to get you on here for the Hey 10 podcast to talk a little bit about A10 hoops too. Obviously, you've probably seen a lot more basketball than the casual fan, and you've seen a good breadth of the Atlantic 10 teams this year. So I think one place we wanted to start, it's kind of been an interesting landscape in the A10 this year. You know, obviously the preseason polls don't always look exactly like the end of the season polls, you know, in a way it's not completely meaningful to rank the teams at the beginning of the year. And, you know, one thing we've seen is VCU, a team that was projected to go to the dance, maybe even make the Sweet 16 and beyond this year with a loaded class of seniors, has now struggled and lost two kind of maybe more head-scratching games, one at home against Mason and then, you know, getting blown out on the road against Richmond. I'm not sure how much of them you've been able to catch or if you've been able to see those two games, but any thoughts overall about VCU and their struggles and, you know, whether or not they're able to turn it around between now and Selection Sunday?
Well, three things. First, there's four A10 games I don't have on television, and VCU is one of them, so I haven't studied them nearly as much as the others. But I've seen them a good amount, even though I haven't studied them. So I have two thoughts on them. First, Marcus Evans. He is not playing the way he has earlier in his career. And the crazy thing about that is he had two Achilles tears. That's the worst injury possible, and he's had it twice. You know, the sad thing is a lot of people say the what if. This guy's on track for 2,000 career points and this terrific career, and what would happen if he didn't have those injuries? Ironically, this is the year he had a healthy offseason. And, you know, I know he missed a recent game. He's been questionable, so I don't know what the health ailment is, but he is a super special player. He's a leader. He's a clutch player. He's a defender. He's complete. And there's an old cliche in coaching that, you know, to stop a team, you cut off the head of the snake. And usually the head of the snake is a phenomenal guard, just a floor leader, as well as an emotional leader. And even though no other team has had to do that for VCU, it's kind of like the head of the snake isn't there. The other thing is, everyone talks about the value of seniors, especially fifth-year seniors. I'm not sure about that anymore. The rules in college basketball now allow year-round practice. And these kids are on campus usually 49 weeks a year, and they're doing Navy SEAL training, and they're getting pushed. And I think older players get burned out. I think fourth and fifth year guys have a lot of mileage on them, and coaches have gone to the emotional well a lot of times. When I started in coaching, from your last game in March till October 15th, you literally were not allowed to be in the gym with your players. And October 15th was the most exciting day of the year. It was like Christmas Day. Now it just all blends together. You practice all the time, and I think you sometimes, if you have an old team, they could get a little stale, and that could be another theory. And of course, the third theory, the fourth piece of this is the A10 is better. So LaSalle, and I love Coach Ashley Howard dearly, he's a friend, and I worked with him. You know, their record is not going to be as good this year as last year. VCU is not, but part of that is who you're playing. The league is just better.
Yeah, I mean, I think you made some great points there. And I think to the point of Marcus Evans, I think he's been one of the most unlucky players in the A10, if not, you know, the entire country, seeing some of the injuries he's been dealt. You know, I thought back about that last game last year against Temple in the non-conference when he gets, you know, blatantly fouled on a three-point shot and, you know, VCU goes on to lose that game because they didn't call it. Definitely dealt a couple bad hands the Rams have with Marcus Evans. And I could see him being somebody whose body is kind of starting to wear out as the years in college have worn on him. But, you know, VCU, certainly a team that's been talented this year. But like you mentioned, the A10 is up in general. You know, we talk a little bit about Dayton. Dayton is a powerhouse this year, and I think they've gotten a lot of coverage. But You know, after the Flyers, do you see a team that's standing out in the Atlantic 10 that could make a run in the NCAA tournament? Should they get an at-large, or should they kind of steal that bid in Brooklyn?
Yeah, flat out Richmond. They're so good offensively. I have no hesitation in saying Richmond. Rhode Island is outstanding defensively and a really good team, and they are best positioned for that second bid in the A-10 right now, and they can certainly win in the NCAA tournament. They've won in the NCAA tournament the last few times they've been in. But Richmond offensively is really, really tough. And here's the other thing. Their Princeton offense, and when I say Princeton, I don't mean slow. I mean the cutting, the floor spacing, the options they have, the flow that they have. If you haven't coached against that this year, you're not preparing for that in a few days in the NCAA tournament. So I think style of play, numbers of shooters, golden inside, I think they're just, we talked about not being too old. You know, they're juniors. They don't really have seniors. They have everyone back. So a year from now, they could be in VCU's position where, you know, they'll have a lot of expectations, and maybe they'll be a little older and worn out. But right now, I think they're fresh, they're talented, they're inside, they're outside. They have a style some teams haven't seen, and they can really shoot it. So I'm big on Richmond if they can get in.
Yeah. A great point. And favorable schedule coming down the stretch. So I think there's a really good chance.
Favorable, but also unfavorable. Because if you read the bracketology guys, they could really use another quad one type win. So you're right. They have a good chance to keep winning, but the type of win that they might need is not there. That's why yesterday was so huge against VCU.
Mm-hmm. I think chance that Davidson road win becomes quadrant one if the Wildcats continue to improve. But, you know, to your point, definitely lacking some of those quad one victories compared to, you know, some of the middle of the pack, Big Ten, SEC, you know, Pac-12 teams that are starting to rack up those wins this point in the season.
And they really have to root for Wisconsin. That's another thing. When you have some of those Power 5 wins, how good that looks to the committee depends on how that team plays down the stretch. So Spider fans also have to be Badger fans right now.
Sure. And certainly a win in the A-10 tournament over a team like Dayton would really help. You know, that's obviously a good place to get some neutral site wins before Selection Sunday. Speaking of the A-10 tournament, I think Brooklyn always has this kind of magical aura of somebody outside of the top one or two always finds a way to win. And, you know, the A-10 tends to send another team dancing, even though it looks like it might have been one less. You know, SLU won last year as a 6th seed, which was kind of unexpected, but also it was a year where the league was wide open. Do you see a dark horse candidate that could possibly surprise the Flyers in the A-10 tournament this year, or somebody outside of that kind of top Dayton, Rhode Island, Richmond tier that we have right now, you know, kind of sneaking up and maybe winning the A-10 tournament?
You know, there's probably 8 teams capable, but of those 8, and I'm a huge St. Bonaventure fan, I'm not sure they're quite ready being sophomore-led. So now you look at 7 teams that have a chance, and, you know, let's eliminate the top 3, as you said, Rhode Island, Richmond, and Dayton. So now that leaves Duquesne, St. Louis, and Davidson. I would say Davidson. And I certainly think I would rank them Davidson, St. Louis, Duquesne in that order. And I do think Duquesne can win the A-10 tournament. Although I think those others, I'd probably rank them 6th. You know, Davidson, another team that's really hard to guard, that can shoot it and spread you out. And I just think that they're capable of exploding because of the system and the shooting. And the complete opposite of St. Louis, a team who cannot shoot, but that's going to defend and rebound. I almost always err in the postseason on the side of offense, though. You know, because you're going to be playing a good team, and it's going to be hard to lock someone down, you know, for 4 straight games. So my dark horse would be Davidson, although before the season, as you said, they certainly would not have been a dark horse before the season.
Yeah, I think, you know, we always see this. It's kind of the blueprint for Davidson seasons where, you know, maybe start the season kind of highly ranked, highly touted, drop off a little bit in the non-conference. And then, you know, February, March rolls around and Bob McKillop tends to have his guys playing his best game. So I agree with you. It'd be foolish to pick against Davidson in the A-10 tournament. And certainly a team that, you know, could creep up there and get good, decent seeding and make a run. So I think that's a good team.
We left VCU out of that mix too. And, you know, you don't think of them as a dark horse. But, you know, there's a saying about pressure, that pressure works early in the year and late in the year. And that's because of freshness and energy. Early in the year, a team like VCU has tremendous energy, but can you maintain that energy in the dog days of January and February? But then when it's one and done in March, you know, you could get that maniacal havoc defense back up to par. So I do think the A-10 tournament is fascinating. I think there's so many teams that have a chance at it this year, probably more than ever.
Sure. And, you know, Davidson and VCU, probably two of the most talented teams in the conference when you look at their rosters. So definitely can't count those two out in March. And I'm definitely looking forward to Brooklyn.
Let me just finish one more thought on that, though. Should Dayton lose a game before the tournament? It's an interesting thing. And the NCAA doesn't actually care whether when you lose, they say it's your whole body of work. In theory, a game in November is supposed to count the same as a game in March. But, you know, the more Davidson, maybe for NCAA tournament purposes, I mean, as a coach, you don't believe this, but as an outsider, I think I do. The pressure of winning streaks, I think, grows. And I do think going into the postseason, and you will see this with a lot of national championship teams, with maybe the exception of the last Villanova one. I don't think it's really a bad thing to lose a game before the NCAA tournament just to take some pressure off.
Yeah, I could completely see that. And, you know, two tough games for Dayton coming up on the road at VCU and at Rhode Island. So a loss is a real possibility. And I don't think, statistically speaking, it's in the Flyers' favorite right now that they're going to go undefeated. So definitely a possibility. And I think that's a great point that, you know, maybe Dayton needs a little bit of a reality check before heading into the NCAA tournament if they do want to make a deep run. But we have all, you know, we've covered a lot of teams. I think we've talked about NCAA tournament potential, A-10 tournament potential. I want to kind of end here on the last question for you about maybe some specific players in the league. I know we've talked about seniors, but in general, there's been a lot of young guys here too that have been developing for their teams. You know, a lot of teams are rebuilding years with new coaches. You know, guys have transferred out. We've got some big freshman classes, particularly maybe at UMass. Has there been a particular player or two, maybe new or old, that's impressed you this year? And, you know, thinking back from a former coach perspective, some guy that maybe his attitude, his work ethic, his toughness, you really would have enjoyed coaching?
I mean, there's so many, it's almost impossible to pick from. But so I was at UMass Dayton yesterday, and I'm astounded by Trey Mitchell. Absolutely astounded. One of the things I said, finally, as he just made play after play against a top 10 team in the country, I just said, if I wouldn't believe that he's a freshman. If I didn't know that he was a freshman, I would say there's no way this guy could be a freshman. So I just can't give him enough praise. Obviously, their team is struggling. But again, so much of this, and you talk about what perspective do you watch your team from? Fan, coach, official, broadcaster, player. Well, from a fan perspective, I think that injuries are really underrated. And any team that's struggling in the A-10 now, I can pretty much look to a transfer or an injury. And in UMass's case, it would be TJ Weeks. I mean, this guy was their leading scorer when he got hurt early in the season. And what they're really missing is perimeter shooting. And he was shooting 49% on threes. But even though their team is struggling a bit, I mean, Trey Mitchell is poised. He just plays at the pace of a veteran. He never goes too fast. He doesn't try too hard. He's just strong and skilled and instinctual. So, I mean, he had 30 against Rhode Island and Langevin. the best defensive team in the league and one of the best post defenders in the league. Then he has close to 30 against a top 10 team. So it's not only his numbers, it's who he's doing it against. So that to me is the biggest surprise. There's a lot of knowns. And actually the other surprise to me is Dayton's top six. So to have a special team, you need special players. Their top six is astounding to me. Toppin, yeah, for obvious reasons. Landers for leadership and plus-minus efficiency reasons. Mike Sell for versatility reasons. The guy runs a pick and roll. He handles the ball. He pushes it. He passes it. He makes threes. He posts. He rebounds. He defends five positions. Crutcher is ridiculous at clutch time. I mean, it's like one of the things I said yesterday that I think might be accurate. You almost need two scouting reports for him, like for the first 30 minutes and then the last 10 minutes, because what he does at the end of games is you have to stop him. At the end of the game, forget about Toppin and those other guys. At the end of the game, it's all about Crutcher. Chapman, I've had coaches talk about, they fear him. Like if you have young guards, they're like, I don't know, we're going to turn it over against this guy. And then you look, you guys would know this better than I do. Georgia's a great player. I think Anthony Edwards is it, the guy who's projected to be top one or two. I mean, he held him to 6 points from the field. And then I'll tell you what other A-10 coaches say, because I get a lot of my information from them. So Chapman, they're afraid of if they have young guards or if their best player can score against them. And Ibby Watson, they say this guy's an all-conference guy, one of the best offensive players in the league, and they have the luxury of bringing him off the bench. And the other interesting thing is the guys who have coached against Trey Mitchell, and some of these coaches with pretty good teams have said he was the best player on the floor. And that's before I really studied him, and now I know why they say.
Yeah, and he certainly looked like that yesterday against Dayton, which is just incredibly impressive for all the reasons that you mentioned. But yeah, Dr. G, I think we're going to wrap it up there. This was awesome. Thank you so much for coming on and being so generous with your time. It was great having you on. We're going to have to do this again sometime. All right, welcome back to the Hey 10 podcast. We want to say thank you so much again to Dr. John Giannini. We would tweet this interview at him, but he is too smart to be on Twitter. He is currently the interim, I think, athletic director. Maybe he's not interim. I don't know why I'm saying that. But athletic director at Rowan University, broadcaster for A10 Hoops, former coach of LaSalle. Awesome, awesome guy to talk hoops with. I really enjoyed that conversation. For our listeners, me and Grant, when we were interviewing him, we could only hear, we kept dropping large chunks of audio when we were talking to him. So big shout out to our guy Brian from By George, who's going to be the one editing this podcast and make it sound like a nice conversation that flowed, because I'm pretty sure we both just straight up talked over him at certain points because we couldn't hear his audio and we didn't think he was saying anything.
Yeah, I was just waiting for like the little bar to kind of reach a point where I knew it was going to cut off for 30 seconds, and I was hoping I would like get enough of what he had said before that happened and it continued over. But you know, overall great conversation with him. He's an awesome guy, super knowledgeable about the A10 too. I mean, you know, he had tons of praise for a bunch of guys on Dayton. Yeah. The way he talked about Trey Mitchell, you can tell he's watched a lot of basketball this year. And you know, I think having that former coach perspective gives a guy like Dr. G, you know, makes him a great guest on a podcast and makes him a great broadcaster as well.
Yeah, for sure. It was, I think I'm going to email him after this and see if we can talk for like 2 hours at some point. Because there are just so many questions I want to ask a guy like that. But yeah, he was also super thoughtful. He asked us to send him questions beforehand so that he could think about them and be as thoughtful as possible. And I think that really reflected in the way he clearly was prepared for, you know, the Hey 10 podcast and not just sort of speaking off the top of his head. So really awesome, awesome interview. Awesome guy. Hope you enjoyed it. Grant, let's cover some games of the week.
Yeah, games of the week. So we're going to go by schedule and with what we have coming up. Obviously, the big game on Tuesday, probably the most important game of the week, although maybe losing a little bit of its shine after VCU's been slipping off recently. But Dayton at VCU on Tuesday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time on CBS Sports Network. Big game. The Flyers should be in the top five this week after Louisville lost two road games, I believe. So we're going to have a top five team coming into the Siegel Center. And, you know, this was probably circled on most people's calendars at the beginning of conference play due to the fact that VCU and Dayton were the top two teams. And, you know, the Siegel Center is just such a tough place to play. Now we're probably thinking back on that a bit and saying, well, you know, Mason just went into the stew and won. And VCU struggled on the road at Richmond, kind of falling off the NCAA tournament picture. So does this game carry as much weight as it did, say, 3 weeks ago, Petey?
Yeah, I mean, probably even more if you think about it, because if VCU wins this game, they absolutely need to win this, I think, to wind up back on the right side of the bubble. So I think in many ways it's probably maybe even more important than when we were looking at it a few weeks ago. It was both teams that were pretty comfortably in. But I think that if Dayton wants to stay on that two seed line, they need a win here. They can't afford a loss. And if VCU wants to, you know, actually get back into the tournament, put themselves back into at-large contention, absolutely need this one.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm wondering if it's even going to be enough beating Dayton. You know, you look at their schedule right now, you look at their resume, you know, only one quadrant one win, only one quadrant two win, seven losses in those two categories, and that Mason home loss was quadrant four, which is really pretty bad. You know, so obviously beating a top five team in the country gets you a little bit closer to the bubble, but I wouldn't even go as far to say if VCU beats Dayton, they're back in the field by any means. You know, I think I saw Lenardi's projections this morning had them as the eighth team out. So, you know, so I can only assume jumping or beating a team that you're supposed to lose to by 3 or 4 points at home would maybe get you a couple spots closer. But I think VCU really needs a lot to happen in its favor to get closer.
For sure. So it's not going to be only this game. But Dayton is one of, I think, three quad one opportunities that they have left.
Right.
Dayton at home is going to be quad one because they're so good. But then also they get St. Louis on the road and Davidson on the road. And those are going to be, because those are road games, those are both also looking like they're going to be quad one opportunities. So they need to snag at least two of those probably. And of course, beating Dayton, top six team in the country is, you know, the sort of the feather in the cap. And I think it will be sort of a trump card of sorts if they're on the bubble on Selection Sunday.
Sure. And I think final point on this game, should be a good indicator as to whether or not Dayton actually could go undefeated this season, right? This is there's only three road games left, and two of them are at VCU and at Rhode Island. Obviously, at Rhode Island is going to be the toughest game for the Rams from here on out in their schedule. But if they can get past VCU on the road, you know, they're looking at all home games with the exception of at George Mason and at URI. So, you know, you get past this one, and I think 18-0 becomes a little bit more likely.
Yeah, I don't think they're too worried about at George Mason.
Probably not, but you never know.
Yeah.
I guess Patriots did just lose to George Washington yesterday, so maybe that's more reflective on VCU's status than it is on the Patriots. But, hey, congrats on that big win. I know you guys are happy about that one over there.
We are. We are. And thank you for confirming that A10 Talk hates VCU. nice to hear you say it out loud, finally.
Oh, man. moving on, though, we're still talking VCU because they, like you mentioned, you brought it up, they have another big road game, or not, you know, another road game, but another big game this week on the road at St. Louis. It's our hashtag Friday 10 game of the week. The Friday games have been particularly interesting this season. And, you know, VCU going at St. Louis, I think that's another big game for both these teams. It's another big game for seeding, too, right? You look at the current A-10 standings, you see VCU and St. Louis both at 7-5. You got to think the loser of that game, especially if VCU isn't able to pull one out over Dayton, is maybe looking at that 8-9 game.
I think that's absolutely spot on. It would have been wild to say a few weeks ago. But yeah, I mean, I don't know how you know, with Davidson looking a little bit sharper, Duquesne, Bonaventure, I think they both have game leads in the loss column, and they also, I think, have easier schedules down the stretch. So it's kind of wild to think that these are two teams that might have been competing to stay out of the 8-9 game. But I mean, I think you're right that that's exactly where we are. These are two teams that could finish in the 6 or 7 range, and if they're not careful, could absolutely end up playing the one seed.
Mm-hmm. And beyond that, I think this will be an interesting game of kind of competing styles. Two teams that offensively have not been great this year, not been great in the A-10. And two teams that really defend well at a high level, like to get on the boards, like to rebound, like to play physical, and kind of just kind of have that gritty feel and gritty sense to it. So it could be a rock fight. We could see a low scoring game. I think whether or not Marcus Evans is back this week could have a major impact on whether or not VCU is able to go 2-0, 1-1, or 0-2. But you know, I think in conclusion, if last week wasn't a huge week for VCU, this is a huge week for the Rams, and it's either you know, get right real quickly, win two games you're not supposed to win, or it's the season's over and you're headed to the NIT.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's a good point. SLU and VCU are much more similar than I think anybody would have guessed at the start of the year. They're both kind of rock fight teams. The difference in my mind is that St. Louis kind of like embraces that identity of playing bully ball a little bit more this season, at least. You know, they're big, they're physical, they rebound, they'll just beat the hell out of you up and down the floor all game long. They know it's not going to be pretty. VCU, you know, they seem like that's a gear that they're built for, but they're just kind of missing it in these last few games. So I think that's a good, you know, it's a good point. It's a good call out. VCU has to go to Chiffetz, which is not an easy place to play. I think that's one of the top stadiums, top arenas in the A-10. It looks awesome when it's full. You know, they'll get a big crowd out there for VCU. So definitely VCU's in a little bit of trouble if they can't pull that one out.
Interesting. Moving on to the Saturday games, we have we've got a couple good ones. Let's start with kind of a quick hitter on Duquesne at Dayton. Probably not much of a game as Dayton should be pretty favored at home. Took care of the Dukes on the road, but only by 4. I think this one's interesting because, like St. Louis, Duquesne kind of plays a style of basketball that seems to bother the Flyers. You know, if they're not shooting well, they're not getting on the offensive boards. Duquesne can really take advantage. You know, you got a couple of big guys in Michael Hughes and Marcus Weathers that can really get on the glass on both ends of the floor. And, you know, Duquesne kind of had that spirited comeback where they were able to get within a couple of points at home when the Flyers came and visited. So do you think this is much of a game? Do you think this is the same situation where St. Louis, you know, plays Dayton tough at home, then goes on the road and also plays them tough? Or do you think Duquesne's just going to get blown out on Saturday?
Yeah, it's a good question. So much of it just rides on whether or not Tavian Dunn-Martin is hitting his shots, right?
Sure.
So I think that's a big part of it. I think Sincere Carey, his turnover rate has been sneaky high this year. He's kind of a one-to-one assist to turnover guy, which is not, when you watch him play, he seems like a table-setting point guard. And, you know, I was just really surprised when I saw that in his KenPom numbers. So that was interesting to me. You know, I think when Duquesne's clicking, I think they're absolutely as good as, you know, as good as the top of the A-10. The question is that, like, when they're clicking, it just means that, you know, Tavian Dunn-Martin's going to go, like, 6 of 11 from 3 or something. Mm-hmm. And that's just such a coin flip every single game.
Yeah, and I think defensively the Dukes did a great job in the first matchup. You know, you look at 10 steals, 17 forced Dayton turnovers. TDM himself had 4. Michael Hughes had 4. He's always an impact on the defensive end of the floor. You know, so when the Dukes want to play spirited defense and really lock down at that end of the floor, they can control a team like Dayton. But then again, that's just hard to do, especially in an opposing arena. And, you know, I'm kind of in the same boat. I think the Flyers roll in this one, but certainly an interesting matchup, and certainly one of the teams that you know, the Flyers might not match up physically that great with.
Yeah. Just a couple more things about this. I think that keys to slowing down Dayton's offense that we've seen are being able to stop teams in transition. Teams who play really good transition defense can slow Dayton down a little bit, because so much of Dayton's offensive excellence relies on their ability to get those easy buckets when Obi Toppin's leaking out. Duquesne, not very good at stopping transition, in the 200s in the country in terms of how many transition opportunities they give up. And then they also aren't that great at defending the rim either. And I think that's the second point to stopping or to slowing down Dayton. They give up about 40% of shots at the rim. They're top 100 in terms of field goal percentage defense at the rim. But I think that they let teams in a little bit too much defensively. You know, they're a good defensive team, but I think the manner in which they play defense is not the sort that makes it that this is going to be a team that's likely to slow Dayton down, especially at home.
Good point. You know, we got, as we're recording, probably within the next 10 minutes or so, Duquesne goes at Fordham. So assuming they can survive that and a home game against GW, You know, Duke could roll into this game a little bit hot, having won a couple under their belt, but going to be a tough matchup and a tough out to get Dayton on the road. But interesting game nonetheless. It was kind of a quick hitter for us. We got two other big games, I think, to point out on Saturday. First one coming a little bit earlier in the night at 5:30 Eastern time. We get Rhode Island at Davidson. And, you know, maybe you look back 2 weeks ago, look at the way, you know, Davidson was trending and looking at the way Rhode Island was trending. This might feel like a game that, you know, no-brainer URI is going to win. Now you look at KenPom, and KenPom says Davidson's a one-point favorite, and it's likely that the Wildcats are actually going to be you know, the ones expected to win at home. It's been tough to win at Belk Arena, and, you know, they just went on the road and dismantled St. Bonaventure, a team that's been trending up. So what do you see as the keys to this game, and who's your pick to win?
Yeah, so I'll still take Rhode Island. Keys to the game, I think, are that Davidson has been playing Nelson Bochy-Udom a lot more lately.
He's been
and
solid, yeah.
So, yeah, and he's also, he looks like he belongs on the court in an A-10 game, mm-hmm. right? So we've talked a lot about how Davidson just does not have the athleticism that's necessary to hang with the top of the A-10. And they just need to execute at such a high level in order to hang, and they just haven't had that gear all season long. But Bochy-Udom gives them a really athletic dimension in the front court that I think is important to them. I'm still, you know, I know Dr. John just said he thinks Davidson's going to, he would pick Davidson as the team to make a run in the A-10 tournament. I'm not there yet. I still don't really believe in the Cats. But, you know, Bochy-Udom coming along is something to keep an eye on, because the issue with Davidson all season long has not been Jag or Kellen Grady. It's just been an abysmal supporting cast.
Mm-hmm. I think this is also a classic something has to give game, where you got Rhode Island, who in conference play has the best defensive efficiency, Davidson with the second best offensive efficiency. So I think, you know, that's going to be kind of a battle right there to see, you know, can Davidson's offense go off, or is Rhode Island's defense able to contain the Wildcats? Also, something interesting to note, Davidson's actually been pretty good defensively at two-pointers this year. I don't know if that's just a product of the teams they've played. Granted, their schedule's been pretty weak to this point. They still have to face mm-hmm. Richmond, Rhode Island, VCU, and Dayton, four games between now and the A-10 tournament. So that number could be inflated at the moment. But Rhode Island, also a team that only 46.7% from two in conference play. So Davidson might actually be able to control least dictate, some of the shots inside the three-point line. You know, if Jeff Doughton's pulling up for two-pointers, or Cyril Angevine's looking for buckets in the post, Dayton's been pretty good there. Or I'm sorry, Davidson's been pretty good there. Davidson has not been great defending the three, and that's where Rhode Island's guys like Fats Russell and Tyrese Martin could really take advantage in Belk Arena.
Yeah, Davidson game plans really well, so I think you'll see them play a good amount of zone. I think you'll see them double the post pretty hard for exactly the reasons that you're talking about. If you keep Rhode Island out of the paint, limit their buckets in there, make sure that you're making them beat you by hitting threes, which is something that they're okay at. They can do it, but it's a way to, you know, keep yourself in the game, because they're not necessarily going to bomb away from three the way a team like Davidson can. So I think it'll be, I'm guessing that's how McKillop's going to play it. I think it'll be interesting. I still would give the edge to Rhodey. I think Davidson's a little bit overrated by KenPom, but, you know, it'll be interesting to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll be a fun game. And I think a lot's going to depend on, you know, who goes off. Is it Fats Russell, or is it John Axel Goodmanson? Jag's been playing a lot better recently in conference play. He's had some big games, near triple-double on the road at St. Bonaventure, but also Fats Russell has a tendency to go into opposing arenas and just wreak havoc from all over the court. So, next Saturday, 5:30, I should be at that game. I'll be there live, and I'll get to check it out, but I'm really looking forward to that matchup, and I do kind of agree. I think I'd give the edge to Rhode Island, but it's basically a pick 'em game, and I think that's what it's going to come down to.
Yep.
Moving on, last game of the week. We've got a big one on Saturday as well at 6:30, so an hour after the Rhode Island Davidson. You kind of got to pick your poison or go back and forth on the TV if you're watching. But we've got Richmond at St. Bonaventure, and I think this is a pretty big game for the race for the top four. Obviously, St. Bonaventure just lost at home to Davidson, though they are still up there in the standings, considering VCU's been falling off a little bit. You know, St. Bonaventure at 9-4 currently and projected 12-6 according to KenPom. And they are currently projected to stay in that top four, but I think beating Richmond at home is kind of necessary at this point in this three-game homestand.
Yeah, I think the Bonnies, you know, I don't know if I want to say they got exposed a little bit, but their schedule had been exceptionally weak up until they played the Duquesne game, and they, you know, they played a really good game against Duquesne. And then they, you know, and now we're getting, then they just got waxed by Davidson. And I'm sorry, I shouldn't say that their schedule was exceptionally weak, but I should say that we didn't really know what they looked like against good teams because I think they played VCU, Dayton, and Richmond beforehand and lost to all of them. Or sorry, not Richmond, Rhode Island.
Yeah.
And lost to all of them, but lost without Osun. So, and it's just tough to evaluate that because he's such an important player. You know, you should be concerned about them getting beat up by Davidson like that because, in my mind, and I've said this a few times this year, Richmond is just a better version of Davidson. Richmond is what people expected Davidson to be this year, the way they spread you out, the way they can shoot, and just like with how efficient and how good-looking that offense is. So incredibly important for the top four. Also incredibly important for Richmond's bubble chances and tourney hopes. They, I think, a win against Bonaventure. I think it would be a Q2 win on the road up there, but would still look really good for the resume. Probably doesn't put them in the tournament as much as a loss hurts their chances to get out of the tournament, but you know, important all the same for those reasons.
Yeah, exact point I was going to make. It would be a quadrant two road win if they're able to pull it out. You know, Richmond, easier schedule down the stretch, I think, considering they have zero quadrant one games left, but also two troop road games at St. Bonaventure and at Duquesne. And those are both quadrant two, kind of the last dodge hope to get some sort of momentum on that resume, start building up a couple wins that are you know, above the Q3, Q4 line, because you know, teams like George Mason, Massachusetts, George Washington, that's not providing you much in terms of a tournament resume of getting in. And I agree with you. I mean, I think if Richmond is able to win this game at St. Bonaventure, then really the last only hurdle is going to be at Duquesne between now and the A-10 tournament. You know, and you win five of those last six, especially six of the those last six, you're probably sitting four or five, six, seven spots into the tournament field, you know, and it's kind of yours to lose at that point. But, you know, you don't take care of business against St. Bonaventure. You don't take care of business against Duquesne on the road. Then you're probably sitting on the bubble and you're hoping teams from other conferences don't, you know, start stealing bids.
Yeah. Yeah, and one thing I will say is I think I like the way that Richmond matches up against Bonaventure, because Bonaventure is scary because Osun shuts down the paint so well. But then my big, you know, I think the concern there is that the way that Richmond spreads you out with all the backdoor cuts and everything, I think they can get Osun to move around in a way that is advantageous for them. And I think that this is, they run the sort of offense where they'll still be able to get looks at the rim because they're not just worried about, their offense is more than just guys turning the corner on dribble drives, you know, where he can kind of like read that more easily. I think that they backdoor so well and they find open shooters so well that they can kind of neutralize the shot blocking big man a little bit better.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think the other category.
Watch Osun get eight blocks now.
But what's that?
I said, watch Osun get eight blocks.
Yeah, of course, right? and I think the other portion where Richmond has a huge advantage is in three-point shooting, considering the Bonnies really do not do a good job defending the three-point line. So, you know, there's some teams in the conference where Richmond's style of kind of run and gun, shoot a bunch of threes, take a lot of backdoor cuts, doesn't necessarily work because of the style of defense. You know, but the Bonnies, they really do not defend the perimeter well. So you get guys like Nick Sherrod going, you know, Blake Francis obviously back in the lineup. That's a huge addition. But pretty much all five guys that are on the floor at any point in the game can shoot the three. Like you mentioned, that's a very Davidson-esque style of basketball, the way the Spiders play. But at the end of the day, you go into the Riley Center and you just have to be able to make shots. You know, that's what Davidson did the other day. They were red hot from three. Bonnies have not been good defending the three, and Davidson made them pay. So I could see a similar scenario where Bona just can't keep up because the Spiders have been red hot from three. They keep shooting, and you know, shots are just going in.
Exactly. Is that where we want to wrap it?
I think so. I think we'll wrap it up. Any parting thoughts for you as we go into the week? You know, I know we're closing in on March Madness, and I think this is kind of a busy time of the year for both of us in terms of other stuff we've got going on, but also, you know, keeping up with basketball. Where are you at, Petey?
Yeah, I just got to get back to baby buckets. I haven't really been able to watch games with an eagle eye the same way I feel like I was able to in the past because, you know, I've got a screaming baby in my lap a lot of the time. It just makes it tougher to pay attention to, you know, lineups and little nuances that I think are more insightful. Mm-hmm. But, you know, this is what makes it fun because I think the landscape of the A-10 is just fundamentally shifting in ways that we didn't think were possible. Like VCU, like very realistically might drop out of the top four at this point. And just a few weeks ago, that would have been absurd to talk about.
Right.
But yeah, I think it's going to be, you know, it's always interesting in the A-10. I think it's an incredibly fun league. I'm really glad we're doing this podcast. And I'm really glad that the reach is expanding. I went on the Spider Scoop pod with Noah Goldberg and Austin Daisy earlier today. We just got Dr. John Giannini on this podcast, the former LaSalle coach, awesome to talk to. So just overall, just the A-10 community is really awesome. Hope you guys are enjoying the podcast and, you know, excited to keep track of how things unfold down the stretch here.
It's been a lot of fun. I've really enjoyed doing it this year. We've had some fun guests on, and I'm assuming it's only going to get a little bit more fun as we approach the A-10 tournament and the NCAA tournament. Quick thing before we go, I want to plug Twitter account at A10 Talk. We are closing in on 10,000 followers.
Hell yeah.
Getting close. As we record this podcast, we're at 9980. So 20 more followers and we're there. And I think one of our A10 Talk writers is doing a A10 mystery box giveaway. So the 10,000th follower is going to be getting a random surprise courtesy of the A10 Talk team. So if you're listening to this podcast, you don't already follow A10 Talk, go follow at A10 Talk on Twitter. Follow me at Grant Labedz, that's GRANTLABEDZ, at PD Buckets, at PETEYBUCKETS. When are we getting the Baby Buckets handle out there on Twitter?
Never.
That's probably smart.
My daughter's not allowed on Twitter.
She's still a little young for that, I would think.
Yeah. Yeah, sounds good. I'm going to unfollow A10 Talk and then strategically follow back so I can be the 10,000th person.
That's what I assumed you were going to do. Damn it. We gotta make some. We're going to go in there and block you then, Petey.
All right. Let's wrap this up. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We will hope to see you again in a week or two whenever we get another one of these out there. In the meantime, go to the A10 Talk message boards, follow us on Twitter, and we'll see you again. Yeah, Grant, I'm going to pause there. I just spilled my water. I need to go grab some paper towels. I'll be right back.
Okay. Thank you.